This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live from the heart of Manhattan, Rockefeller Center, New York City, Newsstand Studios. Joined as usual with John behind me. How you doing, John?
Doing great, thanks.
Yeah. Got Joe Hazen rocking the panels. What's up?
Hey, how's everyone doing? Full house.
Good. Over in California, we got some Jackie Molecules and some Nastasia the Hammer Lopez. How you guys doing?
Good.
Yeah. Upper left, we got Quinn. Quinn, what's up?
Hey, I'm good.
And then right today, we have, on her publication day, one of our very favorite friends of the show, Arielle Johnson, is here. Now, how do you want me to announce your book? You want it in Broadway form, or do you want it in monster truck form?
I think monster truck form.
Monster truck form?
Yeah.
Flavorama! Flavorama! Get it today at any bookstore near you, but especially Kitchen Arts and Letters, where Patreon members can get a discount. Why don't you tell them how to do that, John?
Go to patreon.com/cookingissues and sign up for one of the three awesome membership levels that we've got. You get perks at all different levels, and at all of them you will get a discount to our friends at Kitchen Arts and Letters for discounts on great books like Arielle's.
Yeah, so congratulations.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be sharing this moment.
Yeah,
with you.
And now I have the hard copy, not just the
PDF.
ratty little PDF. Yeah. And you drew all the pictures in here, right?
I did.
Yeah. So it's better. The hard copy's better. Get the hard copy. Listen, is that just because I'm old, or is it just because hard copy's better?
I mean, for me, if I'm looking for like a specific piece of information, I prefer like digital.
Yeah, search
e-book,
find. Yeah.
But if I'm flipping through something, always prefer a hard copy. So yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm old too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I won't ask you your age, but 33-year-olds right now, peak millennial. My sister's a peak millennial.
Is she 33?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize she was.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think she was born in 1990.
Yeah. That is peak millennial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's peak millennial.
So was my sister, actually.
Yeah. And so, And like a peak millennial, whenever she's pregnant, she eats raw kale and gets food poisoned.
Wow.
Don't eat raw kale.
Yeah, that sounds like
we were having this discussion. Yeah,
bad plan.
I don't think you should eat raw kale ever.
Hmm.
I think you should cook it.
I prefer it cooked, definitely.
You know why? Because it tastes better.
Too much cellulose.
I don't. Yeah, just the people. Like, but if you slice it really, really thin,
yeah.
Why though? You know what's better sliced that way? Cabbage.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Cabbage is delicious. Sliced that way.
Cabbage, yeah. Delicious.
Yeah.
Kale, tolerable.
Yeah. Well, and then, like, you cook cabbage, it gets, like, very soft, whereas, like, kale does hold up better.
Yeah. You know why? Because that was bred for millennia.
Yeah. To be tough as hell.
To be cooked.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Cabbage. You know, you can boil it, you could eat it, you could crowd it. You
ferment
know?
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, which we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, for those of you that were on the fence, like, I have to say, Flavorama, James Beard Weasels, take note. You got to go get this book is the thing about it, because I'm guessing, we're going to go back and talk about our normal stuff, but I'm guessing, so the very last chapter of this is a whole kind of mini book on fermentation, and I think you're just kind of pissed that you didn't get wider publication on your very first fermentation book, and so you're just like slipping an extra, just... In at the end.
Well, and it's nice to, present fermentation recipes that are exactly what I want and not for somebody else.
Somebody else, yeah. All right, well,
I'm also fine doing, but these are the things that I like.
Yeah, all right. So before we do that, let's talk about anything that anyone has done in the intervening. Actually, it's been 2 weeks. Last week we had to cancel, and we're rescheduling with Solo, right? We're getting, back on.
Yeah, it's already booked.
Okay, when for, so people know?
April 16.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, Solo is great.
Yeah,
My husband is actually the editor on that book.
Oh, come on, for real?
Yeah, for real.
That's so funny. That book is large.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. I have a bone to pick with her on pressure cooking, however.
Okay.
She's anti-pressure cooking.
Interesting.
Yeah. And insults me, not insults me personally, obviously, but like insults, she's like, I'm not against you if you're living that pressure cooker life. I forget whether she uses a Y with it or not. But pressure cookers are good. I think the mistake people make with pressure cookers, is they try to put a standard recipe into a pressure cooker, and then it sucks.
Yeah.
And they're like, why does it suck? She's like, it's great for broth. I'm like, I will have this argument with her. Why am I having this argument with you? And I wait till April. I was all ready to have this argument.
Yeah.
Not an argument. Discussion.
Yeah.
Discussion. Anyway. Yeah, it's a great book, though.
Yeah.
You guys are going to be duking it out. How many different categories are there? Is there one for flavor?
Oh, I have no idea. I mean,
At the Beardathon?
not to like project a sense of false humility, but like for me to be able to do anything, I have to like tell myself it will go nowhere and I'll still do it and do a great job and won't care if nothing happens, because otherwise my like insane perfectionism will like completely paralyze me. So I haven't even thought about that, actually.
Yeah, that's wise. That's wise.
Just gotta learn how to trick yourself.
The other thing is that, like anything else, like you're like, it's, you know, you have to get pushed by the right people who your editor has to push that crap out.
I suppose,
it's such a trash can. Like, everything is a trash can. Like, all awards ceremonies are filth.
Extremely political.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never been involved with
the
this
filth.
Month, but,
you know what I mean? It's like, you know, well, you mean you've been at restaurants who play that 50 best
game. Oh, yeah, sure.
It's trash.
Sure.
I mean, not trash. Hey, no offense, 50 best people. I'm just saying it's not completely whatever. You know what I mean? It's like...
No, there's a sense of, like, wanting to...
It's not bought and paid for. That's
cool.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
but, like,
going too far. But
I mean, you know, but any country or city can pay to host the World's 50 Best Awards, and then all the World's 50 Best voters are in your city eating in your city's restaurants.
Right.
So...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and you can know who those people are and you can reach out to them.
Right.
Or like, you know, with IACP or James Beard, it's like you have to get kind of submitted. So you have to get pushed by your editor or by yourself or have it on yourself. And like, you know, it's better to be well known. And it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm not going to say like, oh, I don't care about awards, because everyone loves people praising them. But like,
I care about them. I don't trust them.
Yeah, I think most of the good decisions in my life have come from choosing like interesting over prestigious. So, like, just gonna kind of keep
those are all the bad choices in my life. Okay. I'm just kidding. I'm just messing with you. All right, so so this week you came out with a book.
I did.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Anyone else do anything interesting this week? Did you have any cooking things this week? Were you able to cook at all this week?
I did very little cooking.
Yeah, makes
this
sense.
Week.
I wouldn't if I were you.
My
either.
Dad was in town this weekend, so we were like out a lot.
Out and about?
Yeah.
You go any place good?
Well, we went to Superiority Burger.
Oh, did I miss that at the event?
Oh, yeah, it's happening tomorrow.
Was I supposed to make drinks?
You don't have to, but Empirical's bringing stuff.
Oh.
So, but you should come.
All right.
Be at the party. I mean, you can make drinks if you want.
But I don't need to work.
No, you don't need to work.
All right. I was thinking.
Sorry. I
was biking over here. I'm like, am I working?
I didn't follow up.
All right, fine.
But, I guess this is airing after it happens.
It's airing now if you're a Patreon.
Okay, so if you're a Patreon and in New York and in town tomorrow, we're having a release party at Superiority Burger.
Hey, another Patreon perk. You can only hear about this if you're on the Patreon. So eat it, non-Patreon people. And we have a caller? No. But Patreon people can also call in, and I think someone is going to call in because they said they were going to. 2-917-410-1507. That's 917-410-1507. All right, Quinn, I know you got some stuff specifically that's also related to the book. What do you got?
Yeah, well, I got a lot of stuff. I'll save some of it for another week, but... Right. I don't want to monopolize time. One thing I did do is I made a pressure cooker... toasted cream,
nice.
And then centrifuged it into butter.
Ooh.
And what centrifuge did you use, Quinn?
Of course, the Spindle 2.0, which should be arriving in North America in about a week.
Nice. Yeah, actually, it's like landing the 16th and then clearing a couple days after that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think the ones in Asia are already in the mail, I think.
So the interesting thing, sorry to get back to the butter.
Back to the butter. Forget the business. Back to the butter. All right, go for it.
The brown butter flavor in the butter itself is, you know, on the milder side, because obviously the flavor is mostly from the proteins, but then you get a really intense, like, toasted buttermilk, which is interesting.
Hmm.
Anytime someone says buttermilk on its own like that, I have the Wham songs in my head with the word buttermilk instead of jitterbug. The buttermilk. The buttermilk. Like that. And then the whole song's playing in my head and will be for the rest of that.
And now it is for all of us, too.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, back to the different flavors in the buttermilk and butter, I would posit that, you know, you're creating all of these new aroma molecules in the Maillard reaction, and some of them are more non-polar, more like greasy than others. So you're getting like...
We prefer greasy.
Greasy. Yeah. Oleophilic.
Yeah.
Any of the ones that are like a bit more cool with water are going to like dissolve in higher concentrations in the buttermilk. And then the ones that only like fat will be like in the butter. So you'll get this like different flavor expression in both. It's the same when you're distilling rose essential oil. You'll like distill it with steam and they'll collect like water and the essential oil will float on top. Then the water is like, that's rose water. So every bit of the rose smell that's like more water soluble will like dissolve into that. So
and you should throw that away because it's trash.
Well, it smells, it's a different flavor than rose essential oil. Yeah. So, partitioning is what we would call that.
What's the worst, flower water?
I mean, I only know rose and orange really.
Mm, which one do you, I mean, I don't.
I prefer orange, but yeah.
All right. Quinn, did you add any base to that? Any baking soda up in that?
Yeah, the actual cream toasting procedure is based off of Ideas in Food blog, Aki and Alex Talbot. So yeah, I do a 0.5% baking soda in the cream. And previously, I've just toasted the cream and then cultured it, which is also really delicious.
Ooh.
But this one I went straight from pressure cooker, just chill overnight. And then I did culture the buttermilk afterward, and I made biscuits, which were also really good.
Delicious.
Cultured it after. I have it, you know, like, I don't know, calling it toasted just bothers me. You know what I'm saying? But let me ask
Browned.
You this.
Call it brown? Yeah,
brown, yeah. Did you neutralize it afterwards or no?
No, I had a little bit of, like, separately cultured buttermilk already, so I just mixed them.
Before you centrifuged it?
No, after.
Okay, so, Dr. Johnson, one of the things I'm curious about is the effect. And, Quinn, was your yield lower than normal? Because cooking the cream is messing with, I guess it's not a protein phenomenon, though it's a fat phenomenon in butter. So it shouldn't really matter what you do to the, it's not like whipped cream where you need both to work, right?
Yeah. Well, I know when you melt butter, it's hard, and then chill it, it doesn't retain the like texture of butter because it's like a water in oil.
Right, get rid of the water.
Emulsion.
Yeah.
But I think, presumably, if it worked for Quinn, then that's the empirical.
Yeah, I mean,
empiricism trumps theory. Right?
Yeah, I mean, because I know that, like, there's always, like, for a long time when I was younger, people were like, you can't heat cream up and then whip it again. You can. Yeah. Done it so many times.
Uh-huh.
You know what
really?
I mean? But you just have to let it sit for a long time in the fridge, and then you can whip it. I've never done a yield test.
I mean, I think the important part is that the fats are cold because they need to be, like, crystallized to hold the whipped cream structure.
Yeah, actually, that's been a lot of my problem with cultured butter is not adequately chilling it after the culture step before the churning and then I have issues when I'm doing the stuff I'm doing. The other thing I've said on the air a bunch of times is that I really like this centrifuge in scare quotes butter. I don't believe it's actually butter. I think it's just like triple cream.
Oh, okay. So you're like taking out a lot of the water, but not enough for it to count as...
Yeah,
butter.
I don't believe it's inverting. Mm-hmm. I believe that it is still an oil and water emulsion. I've never looked at it under a microscope, or whether, in other words, like it's a solid, right? But I wonder whether it's more like a gel, so that there's a continuous water phase,
like an oleo gel.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like a continuous water phase sitch, right? Because it just doesn't look like an inverted.
And is it like spreadable?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you ever go to England and get, like, they have many more kinds of cream there than we have? So, I mean, like, you know, they have clotted cream, and you can buy, like, that one little kind of clotted cream here in the jar. They have, like, a lot of kinds of clotted cream, but also, like, pouring cream, which is, like, cream that is the texture of, like, a thick, thick sauce.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so maybe you're approaching...
Well, yeah,
that.
I mean, no, much beyond that.
The kind of no man's land between like 40% fat and like 80%
So we have a caller. I'm going to put him on the air, but I'm going to finish this. I had an issue with that. First of all, as a chauvinist, like I'm loath to say that the British are better than us at things, but their cream game is so crazy that when I was in London last, I asked for cream to make a cream syrup.
Mm-hmm.
And American heavy cream, you can make a 50-50 syrup with it, and it comes out, it's like 66 bricks water-based based on the fat. There, it just turns to sludge because the fat content is so much higher. I had to milk it up. I was like, oh, you and your good cream, you jerks. Caller, you're on the air.
Oh, it's the perfect time. I was going to call and talk about butter. This is Jonathan from Minneapolis, Math Man, otherwise you call Math.
Ah, all right.
On the, from the Patreon group. And I wanted to say thanks for answering my question the other week about Kitchen as a Laboratory recommendations. And Ariel, I had no idea that you wrote that section on the stretchy ice cream. That was really cool to read.
Thank you. Yeah, that was like my first research paper thing. So glad you liked it.
Yeah. Yeah. And to go straight into the butter, too. So I've been trying to make cultured butter, and I've been ending up with more cheesy flavors than buttery flavors lately. Like, I want more of the diacetyl, nicer flavor, and end up with stuff that tastes like cheese at the end of it. Mm-hmm. And I know Dave talked about using at one point creme fraiche instead of buttermilk to culture it, because I've been using buttermilk.
I have.
And I wanted to know, is there anything that you would recommend? Should I culture at different temperatures? Any advice?
I would probably suggest culturing it for like less time and or a cooler temperature. If you're getting cheesy notes, that's probably from like lipolysis. So like butyric acid is getting freed from the milk fats, and that's what smells cheesy. So like a certain amount of that is like inherent in any kind of cultured dairy, but I think if you run it colder, you should get less of that.
We also used to do it only 18 hours. We would do it like 18 hours on the counter.
Mm-hmm.
And also, in your written question, you mentioned you add salt. I think you might want to skip that.
Oh, okay. So add salt. I've been adding salt at the beginning because it's easy to dissolve it in the water phase rather than trying to knead salt into my butter afterwards.
Yeah, but you add it after the culture.
Yeah, add it after fermentation before
after the culture.
Churning.
Yeah, that definitely is smarter.
Although, I don't know, but if you add it before you churn it,
ruins the buttermilk.
Does it get concentrated in the buttermilk and not in the butter?
Well, in other words, to have the concentration that you want in the butter.
You have to oversalt.
You have to oversalt the buttermilk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Partitioning, but other direction.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Different fractioning than I want. Okay.
Well, I don't know how much you need it afterwards. I mean, I'll say this one thing, though. When you make your own butter, when you're making butter commercially, professionally, right, you have to knead the heck out of it because the buttermilk is one of the prime vectors for spoilage in the butter.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
And people want a high fat content in their butter when they're paying for it. So typical American butter is like 82% fat, I think, roughly around, right?
Yeah, thereabouts. Yeah.
And plus gras. Let's say plus gras with a French accent.
Plus gras.
Yeah, that's how your boy Eric Repair, he used to recommend. He's like, I'm in no way affiliated with them, but like they are like a higher butter fat butter that you can get here.
Right.
Right. When you're making your own butter to put on bread and not to cook with, don't need it that much.
Yeah.
Keep the buttermilk in, because what is buttermilk? What is buttermilk?
Delicious. Sour and at Noma we used to have with the bread service. We'd get this butter from this guy named the Butter Viking Patrick Johansson. And he'd like hardly rinse it at all, so it had like tons and tons of buttermilk left in it. So it didn't last very long, but it was like incredibly delicious.
Yeah, like the stuff that we used to make, it wasn't even nearly as good the next day.
Yeah,
but like, but that day, first of all, I don't want like the Butter Viking. Did I ever tell you the story when one of the first food service jobs I ever had was a place called the White Horse Tavern. And when I was a kid, when I was a kid, I used to go there. And I could never eat there until I worked there because the chef pretended when I was a small child, junior high, that he made the hamburger patties in his armpit. And so I had the image of him actually down in the basement, like putting a ball of meat in his armpit and going to make the patty. And I didn't want to eat a burger there anymore from that moment forward because my imagination is too much. So when you say Butter Viking, I'm imagining a very sweaty, hairy man putting a butter thing into his armpit and going to like form the butter things and then making it. So now I don't want Butter Viking stuff. No,
he doesn't do it that way. Although we did do an experiment once at the restaurant with him where like we would like dip the back of our hand into like raw cream and then see what cultured. So he had like all the girls do it, all the boys do it.
Okay.
The girls' butter was
really
much tastier.
Yeah. Wait, so an N of what?
Oh, just it was like a one-off.
Okay. Yeah. All right. A non-repeatable, non-appeal. All right. Well, so, so Math Man, should we do your, we'll do your cinnamon roll off the air? Or do you want, you have any real?
Yeah.
All right. All right.
No, I figured I'll ask out too. So I'm working on a, trying to work towards a great cinnamon roll recipe. And I use a blend of Saigon cinnamon and Vietnamese cinnamons. And I was wondering, in order to get like a really good flavor coming out, is there a good, should I bloom the cinnamons in the butter? Instead of just sprinkling it on top with the cinnamon sugar mixture and rolling it up.
Yeah, so I would say like the longer you can keep the cinnamon in contact with the butter, the more delicious it will be. So yeah, if you like beat the cinnamon into the butter and then let it like sit around for a
while. Like cinnamaldehyde is more soluble in fats than it is in water.
Yeah, pretty
so
much
thought,
all,
well, you
yeah,
get more of that.
Like all aroma compounds, yeah, are pretty much all.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so,
so maybe even just like do it the day before.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Okay. And then a separate question too, not really flavor related, but the Tang Zong technique to get higher hydration in the dough, is that like, would that be a benefit for cinnamon rolls as well?
Do you want higher hydration? If so, then yes. I mean, typically with cinnamon rolls, I put an unconscionable amount of butter into them. And so
I feel like the soft texture comes more from the fat than from the hydration.
I mean, like that technique is a great technique. You know, it's just increasing the water holding capacity of the dough, right? So that it hold, right? You're increasing the viscosity of the starch by cooking it such that it can hold larger bubbles at a higher hydration during the rising portion of its life.
Right.
Do you know what my favorite one that I used to make? I haven't made it, but I was thinking about this when I read this question. I'm going to go home. I'm going to make it today. Broa. You ever do broa?
I don't think I know what that is.
Broa is a Portuguese bread that's made. Hey, you like that? Joe, you like broa? You like the broa? Yeah. It's like you take cornmeal and you hit boiling water in it so that it becomes like a dough. Uh-huh. Then you mix in rye flour.
Ooh.
And you can use either commercial yeast or not, and some you know, you can add some AP as well. But then you're using the cooked corn flour cooked, and then that provides the structure for the dough to hold together, even though it doesn't contain that much wheat.
Nice.
But it's great. And it's got this crazy cracked – it's dense, but it's got this crazy cracked crust. But I remember we used to have a Portuguese bakery, and I used to get broa all the time. This was like 20-something, you know, 25 years ago. And, yeah, it was one of the first breads that I tackled. I like that. Because it's all about, you know, holding more. But I don't I've never had a cinnamon roll where I was like, the problem with this is it's not – actually, it's not true.
I mean, I've had a dry cinnamon roll.
Dry cinnamon rolls suck.
It's like the main problem with a cinnamon roll.
But do you think it's because they don't add enough butter?
Well, that's a good question.
I mean, it's the same as like, you know, it's like you can go anywhere from hamburger roll up to brioche in terms of how much stuff you put into it, right? Aside from the goop.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it fundamentally similar? Or is it more similar? It's like a sweeter version, right? So is it like...
I mean, like if I get a cinnamon roll that's the same texture as a brioche, that's still too dry for
me. But there's a lot, there's more sugar also that makes
that's
it more hygroscopic. And
that's
it's got goop all in it, right?
So I think the goop, the butter goop is... pretty key.
Oh, sorry. I keep clicking, Joe.
Organoleptic tenderness and moistness.
Yeah. I don't know. Look, try it. Let us know.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to see what'll happen.
Try it. Let us know.
Yeah. I'll give it a try.
All right.
And I look forward to your book from Kitchen Arts and Letters, Ariel.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I'm glad you purchased it from our favorite bookstore.
We love independent and specialty bookstores.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, and there are other great independent
specialty
bookstores.
Kitchen Arts and Letters is
Kitchen Arts and Letters. Yeah. Love those folks. Yeah.
Right. There are others, but they're the best.
Yeah. Or it's like Run DMC used to say, we're the best, or at least we're the ones you like. By the way, anyone from L.A. have any interesting food stuff going on? What do you guys got? What do you got, Jack or Stas?
So my girlfriend's been going through some health stuff, and we're testing out a non-gluten diet to see if it makes her feel better.
Let's hope it doesn't. I mean, I hope she feels better, but I hope it's not the gluten.
Yes, yeah, same. Trust me. So I'm doing it in solidarity, and so that's my food thing. It has not been fun, but I have found that the best gluten-free pasta has been from Taste Republic.
Taste Republic?
Taste Republic.
Not like Taste like Empire. Grammarly. Taste Republic.
No, the Republic. Yeah,
the Republic of Taste.
Taste oligarchy.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Exclusion diets are like. Here's my issue with exclusion diets: is that like A, they suck. B, right. Your mind can play tricks on you because it's not double blind. You know what's going on, right? How about just getting the blood test? Has she had the blood test?
Yeah, but sometimes blood tests.
Sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, I can speak for this directly, that I have a weird reaction to shellfish that does not show up on a blood test or a skin test, but if you feed me an oyster, I will vomit more than you've ever seen anyone vomit in your life.
I wonder what the cause of that. So, but can they normally test for that?
A shellfish allergy? Yeah.
Yeah, because like with cherries, I wasn't able to, I didn't have a blood test because it's a cross reaction
to
proteins.
It's like a birch pollen
right.
allergy. Yeah.
So like that was not testable via blood, but I don't know what the status is on gluten.
They don't do like a skin prick?
They did.
Okay.
But they, not to cherries. Basically what they do is they do a skin prick to all of their standard battery.
Like 90.
Yeah, my whole arm. And it turns out when you're, you and I both, like, super pale skin, like, it turns out everything irritates our skin.
You sure that's not cyanide?
Well, no, I wish it was cyanide. But, like, you go outside, the sun hits me, and I'm like, you know what I mean? Like, so it's like, you know, my skin is not designed for life. Mm. And so, you know, but has she, can you do a blood test for, I'm sure you can do a blood test for gluten, no? Or is it not?
I'm sure you can. So far, the doctor just recommended doing this, so we're doing it.
You can't double blind it, so it makes it hard to, you know what I mean?
But it's I guess you could double blind it if you weren't cooking for yourself.
That's
so,
true.
So, you, the partner, could double blind it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What you'd have to do is do a zero-gluten diet and then just do the gel caps.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, you know, one week your gel caps with, and 1 week your gel caps, you know, with, you know, just dope the gel caps with flour. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like right. cook flour right. or some of that?
Seitan?
Yeah. The point is that, like, I think, like, that's why those things are so difficult in my experience, is that because it's hard to know whether you feel better because you're taking an active step to do something or whether you, or unless you don't feel better at all, in which case, at least then you know. I mean, that's the only time it's really,
well, that's what I'm,
dispositive.
I want her to feel good, but I kind of don't want her to feel better because of this.
Yeah. Well, you want her to feel better, but not for this reason.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we're 12 days in so far. I've survived.
And what, does she feel better? What? How long do you have to eliminate this?
Like 6 weeks.
Jesus.
Wow.
Because, like, you know, people I know who are, like, celiac, it's like they know the minute they, not the minute, but they know the day that they have gluten that something bad has happened. You know what
I'm
saying?
That's because, like, the inside of their intestines are getting sloughed off.
Yeah.
But I think there's, like, wheat sensitivities and allergies that aren't, like, celiac.
That are 6 weeks before you know?
I don't know about that, but.
I mean.
We'll see how long I last. I mean, I'm just a solidarity one, so I may have to bail at some point.
Yo, do you, like, do you, like, go over to Stassi's house and pound a bunch of pasta? You know, Anastasia's all stocked up with pasta all the time. You know?
Yeah, nothing but fresh pasta, right, Stas?
Oh, no. You know, she doesn't play that fresh pasta game. I think somewhere she has like a tractor trailer freezer full of IQF pasta still somewhere. You think that stuff would still be good if anyone had of your old IQF stuff, Stas?
No. We don't have any more left, unfortunately. That was so good.
That was so good. Nastasia's IQF pasta was money in the bank. Not literally, unfortunately, but in terms of its flavor.
It was very good.
Its texture, I mean.
Yeah, it was excellent.
Yeah. Someday. What about you, Stas? You do any cooking? Are you gonna...
We did a bunch. Well, I didn't cook, but I had a cocktail waitress all weekend. For Oscar parties, thought you would
legitimately like for money.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Nastasia, the last time I saw her do this, she pinch hit at existing conditions for us. Did a great job.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I have no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, Ariel, is this true that the picture, your author picture, was taken by our favorite oleologist?
It was indeed. That is a Nicholas Coleman original.
Now, to get this look on your face, was he playing Bansuri, or was he not playing Bansuri as he was taking the picture?
I mean, that's what my face looks like when I'm smiling and not laughing at something.
He cropped me.
What? Well, oh.
So, okay, the original photo is a photo of me and Nastasia. In actually the Harvard Square graveyard.
Oh, I love that place.
Yeah, and it's great for taking photos. But
who's your favorite person buried there?
Oh gosh,
like a Bansuri in the background.
I don't even know.
Gamage with a G. Gamage, maximum gamage. Love that place.
Nice.
Do you know that there's a whole crap ton of turkeys in there?
I can believe that. There's turkeys all over the Boston area.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the actual bird.
Yeah, no, they're scary.
Yeah.
They're big.
So I'm trying to imagine which side is Nastassia on. Is she the side you're leaning away from or leaning towards?
No, she's
towards?
On my, well, I guess my left. The right of the photo.
All right, so
left.
You were doing like a shoulders together.
I mean, I think I just have funky posture, but.
Yeah, don't we all? all right. So what did, so wait, did you take tips or did they cut you into the tip pool or were you just completely ad hoc?
Me?
Yeah.
It was a lot of money and a lot of tips. Yeah.
Oh, they gave you tips. Like whenever I work at things, even if I'm not officially the person there, I feel weird taking the, but you shouldn't feel, no one should feel weird taking the tips, but like, I feel, I don't
if
know.
If you're
feels
doing
weird.
Service.
Yeah. If you're doing service, you're doing service, but you can't, whatever. It's whatever.
I mean, if you have like another job and you don't need it, then.
Did we take tips when we worked at Harvard and Stone Stars?
I don't think we got anything.
Yeah, I think we put the tips to the Harvard and Stone staff, right?
I don't remember.
Also, I hate taking money. Like, I hate the process of, like, that. I don't actually mind it, like, when someone's like, can I have a check, I'll drop the stuff like that. But, like, I like working the POS and, like, making sure it's all.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot easier now with credit cards, but like when you used to have to like, how much back do you want? Beep, 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 beep. You know what I mean?
Yes, I did that in many jobs.
Yeah, back when I used to deliver pizzas, nightmare.
Oh, God, yeah.
Nightmare. I told you this. A regular pizza at Domino's was $6.93, and I used to get a lot of $7 keep the change. Thanks, bud.
Wow.
Thanks, jerks. Anyway. Oh, by the way, is it vanillin or vanillin?
I'm not actually sure. And I mean, like, sorry, this is like a thing for me. Because like, okay, so like molecules have names.
Yes.
You know, like we give that there's like very systematic names we can give them, but a lot of them have common names. So like vanillin has some super long name that describes its exact structure, but also vanillin.
Do you happen to
vanillin.
Know like 193, whatever crazy bull crap it is?
I would have to look it up. Yeah. 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 So like in some ways there is like chemistry has its own language in that way, but there is like no native speaker of chemistry. So like I've had people criticize the way that I say other molecule names before.
You know what they should do?
But like,
you know what they should do?
But like, oh, what?
Drop
is
dead.
Yeah.
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 But so why would they criticize you? Who the hell are they?
I guess other chemists. So like, I think I say diacetyl and.
What, isn't that what everyone says?
They think, some other people think it's diacetyl.
Can it be either?
I guess like, well, technically the middle part of that word comes from like acetate.
Right.
Or so acetyl rather than acetyl would be, in theory, you know, the sound derived from that. I don't know. I'm trying to explain why they have an issue with it, but it's like, but you know what I meant. So clearly my pronunciation works fine.
But the one that pisses everyone off is cation. Everyone gets pissed off by cation, right? It's cation. Right? Everyone.
Yeah, that's cation.
It's cation.
Yeah.
But if you don't know chemistry at all and you read it.
Right.
It's it like, looks like cation,
right.
And they're like, it's anion, you idiot, so it's also cation. And you're like, what? Who cares? Die. You know what I mean?
It's like unionized. If you're not thinking chemistry, it looks like unionized.
Oh.
Yeah.
But it is.
Yeah.
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 I mean, yeah. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Chemistry weasels. Hey, before I talk about this, let's talk about, you have a whole, so you drew all the pictures.
I did.
I love like, so, if you're not a chemistry person, you're going to like your chemistry diagrams. You
want Hopefully. To,
you want
yeah,
to do you want to do the lignin song and dance? Lignin vanilla?
Oh, yeah. Well, so the reason old books smell nice and sweet and nice sweet barbecue smoke smells nice and sweet is that there's a structural molecule in wood called lignin that has this, like, it's not a carbohydrate. It's not, like, a protein or anything like that. It has this, like, totally crazy a methoxyanisole structure is what we would call
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But when you break little bits of that off with, you know, heat or chemical reactions, vanillin is one of the subunits that you get.
And that was one of the first ways they used to make artificial vanilla was from wood pulp.
Hydrolyzing wood pulp.
Yeah, they grind up pine trees and make vanilla.
Yeah.
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 So vanillin. Sorry.
Vanillin. Right. Because vanilla has many other...
So many others. And by the way, John, if they want to know about that, where should they go?
MoFad.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You go to Empire Stores, which is right in Dumbo. You go on the water side on the second floor, go to your MoFad flavor exhibition. And are we having those fools on or no?
Yes. I will text Catherine right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have a whole section about how to, you know, how to sex up a vanilla orchid and, you know, the how, you know, vanillin was derived. I forget whether it was first from tar and then from lignin. I forget.
I don't know. Now they mostly convert clove oil into vanillin. Because eugenol is all, well, eugenol is one of the other molecules you get when you make smoke, but it's structurally easy to make into vanillin.
Yeah. Did you mention already lignin's interesting in that it is completely neutral in flavor?
Oh,
aroma.
Yeah, it's completely. I mean, it's like way too big to interact with any receptors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's the reason that that okra that you bought and didn't feel beforehand is never going to get soft.
Indeed, yeah. We don't, there's not really a way to soften lignin. Actually, after trees, you know, plants, trees evolved the ability to make lignin, there was a period of like probably, I don't know, up to 100 million years where, like, there was nothing that could decompose lignin, so there were just, like, piles of dead trees everywhere until fungi developed, like, a lignin-dissolving enzyme.
Is that the whole petrified forest, Megilla?
Well, that's, like, dry rot.
No, but, I mean, like...
Oh, the petrified forest. Yeah, quite possibly.
Yeah. Yeah. Ah, it's good info. By the way, do you think the average person who didn't grow up eating okra knows about the whole lignin-okra situation?
Probably not.
Okra, when you buy okra, people, you gotta squeeze that thing. If it's if the ribs are hard, it's never gonna get soft.
I think a lot of people are very intimidated by okra.
It's huge in our family.
Yeah.
Probably, huge.
But you know, when you go to the supermarket, if you don't touch it before you buy it, and you get and you get the hard one.
My Nona used to do it, so I mean, yeah. I had no idea. I wasn't cooking it at all. We just ate it.
My favorite gateway okra is just like whole deep fried.
Mm.
Oh my God.
Nice.
Not us. Yeah. We would stew it in tomatoes.
Ooh, you like the mucus. You're a mucus man.
Yeah, it's called bamya.
Bamya?
We would call it bamya. Yeah.
Mm. Delicious. Mm. What's the word starts with a B that's the Spanish word for the goop that comes out of nopales?
Good question.
You know what I'm talking about?
I mean, I know the goop that you're talking about. I'm not sure I've ever heard the word before, though.
Yeah. I wonder whether it's the same mucilage kind of base compounds in that similar to the one in okra, I wonder.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like a carbohydrate-based mucilage or like some other weird molecule.
We used to do a cactus paddle.
By the way, Dave.
What is it?
Baba.
Baba?
Oh, okay.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what the internet says.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, internet. We used to do a cactus paddle liquor at Booker & Dax, and it turns out if you blend it directly into high-proof ethanol, it never forms a mucilage. And then spin it out. Stuff was good.
So the mucilage never forms, or the mucilage will separate out?
Don't know.
Oh, okay. Because if you add a lot of ethanol to something with a lot of pectin in it, the pectin will, like, precipitate.
Yeah.
Not pectin.
Yeah, I used to do that, the autohustino. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I just messed up a batch of orange bitters. Not recently, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's something I did this week. By the way, 2 weeks ago, I was going to talk about it. The French Culinary Institute, as you all know, went out of business, right? And
yes.
They were bought by ICE, the Institute for Culinary Education, formerly Peter Kump. And so they had a party to kind of, celebrate. And they invited a lot of the FCI folks back. So I went there, and Jacques Pepin, this is a power move. When I get here, this is a power move. Jacques Pepin shows up at the thing. And he's giving a talk, and he's like, by the way, don't bother coming up and talking to me. I didn't bring my hearing aid. I can't hear anything any of you are saying. And I was like, boom!
Amazing.
Boom! That's so strong.
Yeah.
If there's a way to say keep away without being overly rude, I can't think of a better way than that. No hearing aid, sorry. And then he doesn't talk like that, obviously. And then he said this. So I don't know if anyone knows this anymore, but Bobby Flay was the first... In the first graduating class of the French Culinary Institute, the very first class number one. And it was his tuition was paid for by his chef at the time. The tuition wasn't that high because it was, you know, 80s or whatever. And so Jacques Pepin goes, yes, and all of our great graduates like Bobby Flay and the rest. yeah. Anyway, so I thought that was funny. So then, but then, so where'd she go? I think she went to CIA. AJ Schaller, who's formerly at Cuisine Solutions, and I think at Danielle before that, but I can't remember where she first started working with. Anyway, so she's at a company now called Mush, right?
Oh, the like overnight oats?
No. Although, what happens to, why do you need to cook an oat? See, to me, overnight oats is just, it's more convenient because you wake up and you have oats. By the way, my rice cooker came back to life. For those of you following the saga of my rice cooker, like, it's died now three times. I don't know how many lives this rice cooker has, but the last time it died, I thought it was dead. I unplugged it, put it in a different spot, knelt to it a couple times a day, got up, and then plugged it back in like a week later, and it came back to life.
Amazing.
Zoji Rushi. Yeah.
Congratulations.
I mean, yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to spend like, what do they cost now? Like $250?
I have no idea. Yeah.
They're so expensive, yeah. A good rice cooker. And why buy a garbage one when I used to have a good one? I just want it to live forever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know? At least as long as I live. I just want it to live as long as me.
That's fair.
Yeah. Wait, so what were we talking about before the, oh, mush.
Oatmeal. Oh, mush.
Oh, yeah, but, oatmeal. But so. You could put it in the rice cooker and do it, but why do I want it cooked overnight?
Well, okay, so most grains and cereals, I mean, all of them, have starch in them. So when you, like, cook a wheat berry or flour or oatmeal over, you know, high heat, you're gelatinizing the starch and getting, like, a like, soft, gooey texture that way. With overnight oats, I don't think you're gelatinizing any starch, but oats have a polysaccharide in them called beta-glucan, which is both how they are good for high cholesterol and how they can get a little, like, snotty if you try to make oat milk. So I think you're just hydrating the beta-glucan and using that as
a... You don't cook it?
Binder. Overnight oats? No.
They're not cooked?
They're not cooked.
Oh, so it's a diet thing because you can't digest the uncooked starch.
I guess so. I mean, it's also like...
I mean, don't you usually use, like, rolled oats or quick-cooking oats?
Yeah, but even then, they like, keep a texture.
They're not completely pre-gelatinized.
Yeah.
They're just squished.
So, I mean, so it's, like, texturally different also than oatmeal.
Yeah, people can tell themselves that.
I mean...
Yeah. okay. All right, so it's not actually oatmeal.
Define oatmeal.
It's just
wet.
Dave. Oatmeal is when you cook oats and you make oatmeal.
Then no,
this is overnight
oatmeal. By
the
definition of oatmeal where it's cooked, it is not oatmeal.
This is just like this is muesli that's sat around for a long time.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, it's basically muesli.
Yeah, it's muesli. All right. I can get with muesli. I like
marinated muesli.
Muesli-nation. Yeah. All right. All right. What were you going to say, Quinn?
I was going to say maybe it's not porridge, but it is still oatmeal.
Interesting.
I don't know.
Well, because meal implies just the, you know, starting material.
Yeah. You know what you should, one reason you should get the book is so you can see Ariel's spice mix chart.
Yeah.
Yeah. She rates the, like, you know, the different, like, it's like a bar, is that a stacked bar graph?
I believe it's a stacked bar graph.
Stacked bar graph of like, you know, different spice mixes and then where they, like, the percentage of it that are in the, what are the, is it four or five groups that you have?
Three groups.
Earthy.
Dry and earthy spices, fragrant spices, and sweet spices.
By the way, if you're going to cook for a long time and or at high heat, what are your feelings on pre-blooming and or like toast frying the spices beforehand and the necessity of doing so?
I'm a big fan of it. Pre-blooming, in terms of like extracting or mixing the aromatic ingredients with fats, so that the flavors permeate the fats before you mix in the water ingredients.
So in the fat, but then dry toasting, you think is relatively less useful.
Well, I mean, dry toasting would be more for like adding toasted flavor to it.
Right, but so what percentage of spices? Because a lot of people do it with everything. What percentage of spices do you think are actually benefiting from toasting?
Oh, that's a good question. I would have to experiment a bit with that because I'm.
When we used to do like caraway, we would like toast half of it.
Yeah.
And like it, because a lot, you lose some of the.
Well, because you will be.
Notes.
Yeah, you're anytime you heat up spices or you know anything aromatic, you will be evaporating away.
Yeah,
some
if you can
flavors.
Smell it, it's gone.
So, yeah, yeah.
Right? That's exactly. how I know my distillation rigs suck. When I can smell it, I'm like, oh, mistake.
Every molecule that reaches your nose is a molecule that doesn't go into the food.
That's right. Ding, ding. All right, so back to Mush. So her company, Mush, is not about overnight oats, right? So,
sorry, by the way.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. So you'd actually appreciate this cereal. Mm. So they're an Israeli company, but they are now here, right? And so they're in upstate New York right now doing work in the U.S. And they're growing mycelium of a bunch of different Ascomites. Ascomites? Ascomites. No, Basidiomyces. Basidiomyces. Fruiting body mushrooms, not underground mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Basidiomyces, right? Anyway, they're growing a bunch of stuff like that.
Yeah.
But they're only growing the mycelium. Yeah. They're not growing the fruiting bodies.
Yeah.
So it grows. They're growing them right now in hotel pans, and they grow straight up like a dreadlock. Like, boom, straight up out of the thing. And then they go Sheboygan, and they chop, like, the stuff that comes out of it off.
Yeah.
And then what they're doing commercially is hacking it up, making it duck cells, and then selling it to people to, like, fold into meat and whatnot. But but the substrate they grow it in has a bunch of stuff in it already, so they're saying that they, you know, they have, like, and it tastes like the actual mushroom, which is weird, because that's what I asked.
Yeah, but I've grown, like, shiitake mycelium for that reason.
Yeah, so they've grown a bunch. They grow a bunch of different ones, including, like, I think they can do magic mushrooms, and they can do cordyceps, but they said it didn't taste very good, so they're not. Mm. I don't think they're pursuing it.
I don't think there's a lot of cordyceps that you grow for flavor, anyway.
Yeah. But anyway, so I was like, I said to AJ, because she's their, you know, their culinary chef person.
Yeah.
I was like, I just want the mycelium. I don't want it hacked up into duck cells. I would just want to play with it, right?
Yeah.
So she brought me two giant, not king oyster mushrooms, just giant oyster mushrooms,
mm-hmm.
the size of a hotel pan and about 2 inches thick.
Cool.
And I was wondering, are they going to be tough? They are kind of vertically oriented. I cooked one of them. It shrank down an unbelievable amount. But, like, it gets, like, a chickeny texture when it's cooked because the fibers are kind of running in one direction.
Right.
But unlike, let's say, you know how, like, when you get the fibers running in one direction in a regular mushroom, it's in the stem, and stems, because of the way that fruiting bodies grow up, the chitin, they get dehydrated and tougher. So the stems are a lot tougher. So they never have as good a texture as the fruiting body. So imagine if you could have strands that are oriented that way in one direction,
mm-hmm.
but they're still the texture of the soft kind of fruiting body and not of the stem, because they haven't been dehydrated, right?
Right.
By the way that, you know, the water transport that happens in a stem in a fruiting body. So I thought it was super interesting. I ruined one because I didn't cut off the part that was touching the substrate.
Okay.
And I cooked it whole. I marinated it with wine and butter and cooked it whole. And the substrate flavor kind of, where the wood chips and stuff kind of permeated the whole mushroom, made it a little bit bitter.
There you go.
The second one I trimmed off a little more before I did it, and like something the size of a hotel pan shrinks down until it can fit like into like an 8-inch or 10-inch skillet. And then I just cut it into cubes. Delicious.
Nice.
Delicious.
Very cool.
Mush.
Yeah.
Mush. So keep an eye out for them. I think we're going to eventually have her on the show or something to talk about. So that was my culinary adventure. Of the made some borlatti beans.
I want to see pictures if you have some. After.
I have a picture of the mushroom.
Okay.
Once I started cooking, like I got busy and I didn't cook anymore. You know, this is why I suck at this kind of stuff. Like I really just prefer to cook and make things rather than document things.
Well, I hate like getting out of the flow.
Yeah.
You know, so you either need someone to take pictures or I don't know, some kind of static camera setup.
Yeah. Oh, my kitchen now is so bad for shooting. Oh, by the way, you have a thing on microns, a chart of microns, which I also enjoy. Your picture of microns.
My powers of 10.
Yeah.
A flavor.
Yeah. Can I tell you something real quick?
Sure.
Oh, powers of 10 is a fantastic video.
It is. That's what I like base the drawing on.
Yeah, but it doesn't go to outer space.
Tell people about it.
Well,
because outer space doesn't matter for this. We're going.
Who here has seen Powers of 10?
No.
Oh my God, John! Before you go on shift today, you got to watch Powers of 10. So I believe it was IBM hired the Eameses,
mm-hmm.
Charles and Ray Eames, to do a whole series of videos. They were films, and kind of the most famous one and the best probably is Powers of 10. And what it's a overhead picture, I think, of a family, or maybe it's just a couple.
It's like a picnic.
Yeah, having a picnic, yeah. Right? And then it goes, whoom, whoom, like powers of 10 of zoom, like yeah. up and down. Sick. Sick.
So they're 1 meter away, then they're 10 meters away.
Then, yeah. yeah. Scale of the universe, and then they go in, right? Yeah, it's been a long time since I've
yeah,
watched
they go
it.
Inward.
Yeah, they go in. It's just sick. It's just good.
Yeah. Well, so this one just goes inward.
Yeah, and it's only like 8 minutes or something. Short, right?
I think Nine so. Minutes. We had like a book of it when I was a kid, so I'm actually more familiar with the book.
You know, a lot of work has been done on the Eameses, and you know, thankfully, I think Ray is getting more play. Mm. You know, back in the day, like I think Charles took a lot of the light. I think Ray is getting her due nowadays.
Nice.
More on today is
finally
today is Women's Equal Pay Day. I think
is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe it is. Yeah, and Pub Date. so. What was it about? Oh, you know, they also did Mathematica, which was one of my favorite museum exhibits, and that got revamped recently at the Museum of Science.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I haven't been in a minute, but my niece and nephew live in Boston now, so.
Great museum.
I'll take them there. Yeah.
Have you been to their lightning show?
Oh, yeah.
The lightning show is ridiculous.
I was very afraid of it as a kid.
Oh, yeah?
That and the T-Rex sculpture.
Oh.
I didn't want to go near either of them, but now I like.
Now you can do the electricity show,
and I can do the T-Rex. Yeah.
Here's the thing about the electricity show. I don't know if we've discussed this on air, but their Van de Graaff generator was made by someone you might have heard of, Van de Graaff. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, yeah. They're like, this is a Van de Graaff generator. You're like, okay. Yeah. And they have a whole bunch more musical Tesla coils now,
oh,
so
cool.
they can do polyphony, which is amazing.
Nice.
Since you are a scientist, mm-hmm. when you go, maybe you can request Thunderstruck, which is the best of all the tunes
yeah,
they play.
Yeah.
Oh, Thunderstruck with the Tesla coils? Oh,
amazing.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God, so good. So on the Micron chart, this yes. what made me think of it. You know what
well,
is...
And for anyone who's not looking at it now, we start with a like zoom in on a banana slice and then zoom in progressively until we get to the size of a banana aroma molecule.
Yeah, Cavendish yeah. banana, I'm assuming.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or Gros Michel, because they have actually more
so hold on a second.
Isoamyl acetate.
So it's nine orders of magnitude?
Yes.
Yeah.
So going from a centimeter to one angstrom.
Yeah. Angstrom, small.
It is very small.
Small, tiny.
It's like the length of a carbon bond is like 1.4 angstroms, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Angstrom is a good unit.
It's a good unit. It's helpful.
Yeah. But do you use angstrom and not nanometer?
Well, it depends on.
It's definitely not nanometer, by the way.
Yeah, if you're talking about like molecules of roughly the size of like volatiles or sugars and things like that, so things with like, I don't know, let's say 20 carbons or less, then angstrom is much more helpful. But if you're talking about like proteins or gels or stuff like that, generally that's going up to like nanometer scale.
I was doing nut milks, and by the way, you do a bunch of nut milk stuff, so I'm going to talk to you about that later,
yes.
too, if I have time, which it looks
nuts.
Like I will not. You know what's a big lie? Mesh sizes on filter bags. So I was making nut milk, and I was trying to see whether, I believe what people say about choosing a nut milk bag size, right? And some people are like 250 micron, blah, blah, blah. So I put them all under a microscope, and wildly inaccurate. Wildly crazy inaccurate. And I'll say this, if you're going to buy one, get nylon and get the square weave, not the ones that look like terry cloth that are in all different directions.
Mm.
Those are random hole sizes, and those they're woven in a way, and they come apart, and so you can extrude a lot through them.
Oh, okay.
Whereas like when you get the nylon ones, it turns out it doesn't make that much of a difference, like 150, it doesn't make that much of a difference, 80, like... It's not as big a deal as you'd think, but like you could squeeze the ever-loving snot out of them.
Is the rating rated to like the pore size or like the size of particle that it lets through?
Believe it's pore size.
Okay.
I looked at them, but even those aren't accurate.
Right.
And I saw something that was sold to me as an 80 mesh.
Mm-hmm.
No, sorry, 80 micron. And it was, in fact, 150 microns.
That's a big difference.
It's not small. So yeah. I took all these pictures and I was like, what the hell? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the nice thing about these is that unless they fail on the seams, which is where they fail, right. The nylon ones, you can squeeze them so hard that you can force it through almost like you're using a press.
Oh, yeah. No, I've done that. Yeah.
But I was also testing. So you use a 280 nut to 1420 milliliter water ratio in the recipe that I wrote down out of your book. Yeah. And I've been experimenting with like much higher nut ratios. Mm. And I think in shaken cocktails, it makes a difference in terms of the texture of it.
I would imagine so.
Yeah, like much higher nut ratios. Yeah. And also, I've been experimenting. You know how much liquid a nut soaks up when you let it soak up?
Like so much?
Like so much. Like 50% of its weight.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, you know, I was soaking for 12 hours. I was looking at the kinetics of like the nut pickup. Nut pickup. Mm-hmm. I was doing it with different things. And my wife was like, just finish the book. And I'm like, my fridge is like full with all different nuts soaking just for like one little paragraph where I talk about it. She's like, just finish the book. But I should maybe put up some of the pictures of the meshes.
Clearly you have the same problem that I do, which is like, well, to answer this question, we need to do absolutely every piece of research necessary.
Ashmer writes in, hey, Ariel, congratulations on your book. And congratulations to me on Bar Contra. Hasn't happened yet, but I'm getting my Flavorama copy delivered tomorrow, hopefully. Does the alcohol and vodka sauce for pasta meaningfully carry / solubilize more flavor, thus making the dish as a whole more flavorful? What happens when you cook out the alcohol? Do the flavor compounds precipitate out? I'm not concerned about the native vodka flavor, just the flavor it can or cannot carry in a cooked sauce situation. What is your feeling on this? Because this is something people talk about a lot.
Right. It is... I have not done a side-by-side of vodka or no vodka. I have read about people doing a side-by-side of vodka and no vodka, and there is a significant difference.
People that you trust?
I believe so.
Okay.
I think like Cook's Illustrated or something like that. But
MoFad, the museum, wants to know your favorite flavor. I know that's a tough question.
Gosh. Impossible to choose, but cardamom is a big one.
Ooh, cardamom, delicious.
Yeah.
Green, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I mean, I like a decent black cardamom, but the sort of, like, cleanness of green cardamom
is very nice.
What do you hate doing?
I hate getting the husk off of a freaking cardamom pod.
Yeah, it's awful.
Hate it. That's why, like...
It's so annoying.
Are you against paying for people to just get you the cardamom seeds and not have to deal with that pod?
Oh, no, I absolutely buy decorticated cardamom.
Ooh, decorticated is my new favorite word. Decorticated. Decorticated. Love it. Are there things in common about flavors that can be identified with and without visual textural clues and those that need one or both to taste like the thing that they're supposed to? That's a complicated question thrown at the end.
Yeah, I'm having trouble parsing that question. Like, do flavor differences exist?
No, I think it's like, is that some flavors are hard to actually put your finger on what you're tasting unless you can see them.
Oh, yeah, that's just a feature of, like, being in or out of practice.
But do you think, so you don't think it's like, you don't think it's compound specific? Some compounds are easier to just go ding just by smelling them?
I mean, there might be a few.
I think maybe it's personal too, right?
Right. I mean, like, most of this has to do with your own experience and memory. So, like, anytime you smell a thing, you're more likely to be able to pick it up later.
All right. And on the way out, Positive MD wants to know about good dessert to pair with a duck-themed dinner. Most people want something orange-related.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, a Grand Marnier Soufflé.
What do you go with? It's not orange. You have a whole citrus chart. Go Buddha's hand. Go Buddha's hand.
Yeah, Buddha's hand. Grand Marnier has orange in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Buddha's hand upside down cake.
Mmm.
Could be good.
You know, I have a, I haven't published it yet, but I have a big old Buddha's hand recipe. Anyway, listen, we could talk forever. We'll have you back on the show.
Okay.
Everyone, do yourself a favor and go out and buy a Flavorama. Cooking Issues.